Blog Talk Radio.
Only 5% out of 100. Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you want to end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Both with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
All day. What's good, everybody? We are back at you. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and seated around the round table with me, I got my man Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, and Akil Bayon, and be with us in a couple. Jimmy held it down last week with guest co-hosts while the rest of us were basically spread around the country on official War Room business, so shout out to you, General. And to Mojo, no. Season Ticket, as well as Hustle Simmons of the Nothing But Sports Show on Black Flag Radio. They were here to hold it down with Jimmy, so shout out to them, too. The NBA Finals are well underway, and we're going to break them down for you and much more. But right now, make sure you join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join in the conversation. You can also call us directly when we open up that Digital Extreme Tech hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. But before we get started, as usual, we got to shout out our industry partners. Make sure you listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out Brandon and Daniel on Sports Trap Radio Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, also on Blog Talk Radio. And you also, you know, you got to follow those guys because, man, they're sports junkies, so they'll just do a show whenever they feel like doing a show. So you got to stick with them. You know, they basically, when they tell you to check your local listings, check your local listings. But don't worry, if you can't catch those guys live, you can hear and watch all of our partner shows at warroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on FatsRadio.com. But right now, the Blueprint is going to tell us what happened this week while y'all were on the grind trying to get that paper.
Yes, sir. You already know. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, while you were on the grind is brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, which includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website. Yeah. That's warroomsports.com. Click on the DirecTV logo and make sure, you know, do what real men do. Real men get the Sunday Ticket. So, at any rate, what's up, brother Dell? How are you?
I'm good, man. Back on the East Coast.
How was the weather out in Vegas, man?
Man, it was hot as shite in Vegas. But, it's man, I used to think this was BS, the whole dry heat versus humidity thing. But it's real, man. It was 105 in Vegas, and I could walk down the strip. It's still uncomfortable, oppressive heat, but you don't sweat because it's not like over here where it's so humid, and it's a big difference, man. I ain't got to change clothes 3 times a day in Vegas.
Yeah, you've been sweating like 82 on the East Coast, man.
Yeah.
Man. Yo, global warming is real. Yo, shout out to Al Gore. Anyway.
He invented that and the internet.
Yo, this is true. Listen, first story I want to talk about, I definitely got to hear what you have to say about this, is one, Adam Pac-Man Jones, he slapped the sugar honey iced tea out of a young woman outside of a nightclub in Cincinnati. Now, supposedly, he's coming from a baseball game, you know, and he likes to frequent establishments such as this bar, and the young lady, like, you know, wanted to take a picture with him, and he didn't want to take a picture with her, so she threw a bottle at him, and, you know, he did what he did. Now, you're Adam Pac-Man Jones, yo. You can't do this.
Exactly. See, and that when you, because I've actually seen the surveillance footage. We posted it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/warroomsports, maybe like yesterday. When I watch the footage and you hear the story, I mean, the biggest problem of the whole thing is what you just said, Jimmy. you're Adam Pac-Man Jones. There's a different standard for this dude because of the one that he set for himself. But if you watch this surveillance tape, because he claims that he did this in self-defense. Now, there was like a little partition, a little fence or something in between these people. It was kind of low, maybe like, you know, stomach height or something like that. But everything, it's one of those things, man, where in this case, a woman really, I don't condone hitting women, period. I don't condone it. But this is one of those situations where, you know, if she breaks bad on a dude the way she did, you know, it's not surprising that some dudes would react like that, because it looked to me like it was just natural reaction, because they were kind of face-to-face talking, and all of a sudden, like, you couldn't even really tell if she threw the bottle or if she poured it on his face. All you know is she did something first, and he just smacked the bejesus out of her, dropped her, and then she got up, you know, kind of ran after him like she wanted some more. Like I said, Pac-Man really doesn't get the benefit of the doubt because of his history, but I don't know, man. I don't know if you can call it self-defense, because there was a partition between them, so he probably really didn't have to get that close to have the conversation with the woman. But in the very least, I would give him natural reaction. Did you see the video, man?
I definitely saw the video. But the problem is, he's not being judged on the same standards as me, you, or any other gentleman out there. You're right. Pac-Man Jones. So first off,
you could drop a boulder on Pac-Man Jones. He do something,
you
know, he's gonna get judged.
Exactly. You know, you have to watch. Even, you know, and I hate to say that you can't do what a normal person can do, but yo, you can't. You shouldn't even been in a situation like that.
He made his bed. Now he must lie in that bed.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, yo, stop hanging out in bars, yo.
That's life.
That's another great point.
That's another great point, Jimmy, because you can point to the things that he's doing that contributes to the situation, your reputation. Why are you in that location? Not that you shouldn't be able to go out, but, yo, you've made your bed. You've made your bed.
I mean, it's the type of thing where people know his history. So you can see Pac-Man at a bar and start some trouble. Because you know,
let me ask y'all, brother,
he's going to get in trouble, and I'm not going to get in trouble. But at the very least, Austin, if Jeffrey Dahmer was
falsely accused of eating somebody else, y'all defend him?
Brody! No, but here's my thing, though, man. I mean, we all think
that analogy is a little extreme. But
yeah, because you went way extreme, dog. I don't even know how to respond to that. But the bottom line is, man, he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt, and that's what he did. He created that monster, so he has to deal with it.
Jeffrey Dahmer created him.
Yeah, but what I was about to say before a dude was talking about Jeffrey Dahmer eating people was Pac-Man, I mean, at the very least, this woman deserves some type of charges as well, though. You know, even if these charges stick from him slapping her and dropping her the way he did, she should get charges too, because you can't just throw bottles in people's face. You can't just do that. That's assault as well. So, you know, maybe they can be cellmates in a co-ed prison or something.
Yeah, but he definitely was out of control. But again, he's Pac-Man Jones, so it doesn't matter what happens. He's going to, you know,
talking about
Dahmer
eating people's faces, man.
Yo, yeah, Austin went way extreme.
Yeah, he went left.
Yo, he went way extreme, and you know, it's funny because he's definitely a nominee for the JoJo Award, but we have some more nominees for the JoJo Award. Let's talk about Chad Ochocinco Johnson. He gets 30 days for slapping his lawyer on the arse in court. The judge asked him, was he happy with his representation? And, you know, he said he definitely was, and then he slapped him on the ass as if this was a sporting event, as, you know, often is done in sporting events. The judge didn't find it funny because, first off, the courtroom erupted in laughter, and he kind of showed her up. People say, well, he didn't show up. I know you dumb men have been in court before. You know, judges take their courtroom very serious. It's not a laughing matter. So, you know, to me, Chad is in no time or place, and because of this, he got 30 days in jail.
Keyword, showed up. Showed up, man, just like you said, because watching that video, which we also posted on our social media sites this week, it seemed like a situation. It was definitely a delayed reaction, because after he slapped his lawyer on the butt, you know, it was like one of those foul calls in the NBA where the referee waits for you to fall and then they call the foul?
Yeah.
If the people didn't laugh the way they did, she probably would have let it slide. But it's kind of like, okay, I saw it, and it probably wasn't that bad of a gesture, but the fact that you made my courtroom show me up by laughing, that's your ass. I mean, and she was about to take the plea deal and everything, and after she gave her little speech, she gave the papers back like, I'm not going to accept this. Now, I do think it was a little petty on the judge's part. And
she's
knowing,
she's trying to be a star.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like Jimmy said, like, those judges take their courtroom, like, very seriously. They're like umpires in the MLB. You know, they kind of make it about themselves at times when it shouldn't be. But Chad, I mean, we know how he plays, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of time he is playing to the crowd to get a laugh. This time, I think I probably could believe that, you know, that was just a natural reaction, that he wasn't really trying to get a laugh. But you got to laugh, and that what got you in trouble. So.
He was trying to get a laugh.
He calculates every
face.
Move. You're giving him the benefit of the doubt. He knew he was going to get a laugh.
He looked surprised to me when everybody started laughing. He turned back around kind of like, damn, y'all saw that.
The thing about Chad is that if you follow him just in general, Chad doesn't know time and place. And, you know, it's funny when you're in everyone's good graces that you don't know time and place. It's like, oh, look at Chad, he's silly. But ever since he laid his hands on that young woman or headbutted her or whatever he did,
he was in court for a probation violation for that.
Yeah, pretty much. You no longer get the benefit of the doubt. And now you have to, you know, you have to know time and place. And the courtroom is just not the time or place to do that. Like, so.
There was an interesting item that was pointed to, and I don't know whether this has any bearing on anything, but allegedly the judge was caught saying that at the time of her driving test, she was legally blind. So that begs the question, with the distance between her and Chad, did she actually see what he did to his counsel, or was she just going off what a bailiff told her or the reaction of the court?
She made the decision right away.
I don't know how many bailiffs are actually in the courtroom, but there was a bailiff behind Chad who also laughed. So I don't know if there was one. Yeah, I don't know if there was one next to her that might have whispered.
Far enough to see what he did.
Yeah, I mean, it was a delayed reaction, so I don't know if there was. I didn't see on the camera, on the video, if there was another bailiff close to her to maybe whisper in her ear, but.
Yo, it just doesn't matter. Like, you got to know time and place, and you have to understand who you are. I mean, the same thing applies for Pac-Man, applies for him.
You can't do that.
You just can't. You got to watch how you move. You can't do that.
I think it was an excessive. You know, I think it was excessive on the part of the judge.
I think it's going to get lifted, though. You know what I mean? I think her point has been proven. His lawyer is trying to get it reduced. I think they'll pretty much do it, but I think she's trying to send a message to him that I'm not playing with you. You know what I mean?
I don't even think it's excessive, yo. I just don't, because my thing is, yo, you know who you are. You know what you did. This is not a laughing matter. It's not a town place. You sit still and you say, listen, this is a courtroom, yo.
I mean, the only reason I would agree a little bit with the word excessive is because she had already made her decision. You know what I mean? So it is kind of excessive to just go back on that. Hand the papers back to this man 30 days in jail for slapping his lawyer.
Until that gavel hits, until he walks out the courtroom. I've seen situations like, there's one on YouTube where the chick, you know, was talking under her breath after the judge gave her probation, brought her back in and gave her ass like 2 to 3 years.
She ain't banging that gavel.
I mean, it can
remember
happen.
The Martin episode, Jimmy, the courtroom Joe, when he was talking trash because he thought the cop wasn't going to show up? Cop showed up. He was like, bang that gavel, judge. Bang your gavel.
I think Chad, in this case, because he's always clowning, he's always playing around, I think this is a good dose of reality for him. I mean, I would hate that it has to come to the point he has to go to jail, but now it's like, dude, get serious.
You might get your butt taken off just because you was playing around in the courtroom.
Hey, bottom line is, and I ain't even trying to be smart, yo. His life went downhill ever since he started messing with that chick.
I think ever since he changed his name, his reality went downhill.
Listen, man, girls of the world ain't nothing but trouble. Anyway, listen.
messing with rats.
Next story. Kobe Bean Bryant. settles his memento lawsuit. I hate saying it, it sounds crazy with his parents. And he also issues an apology.
No, they issued an apology.
They issued the apology.
Well, yeah. No, I'm sorry. Well, parent, yeah, his parents issued the apology, but the whole thing just sounds crazy when you say Kobe lawsuit and parents. It just, and I understand they've always had a contentious relationship ever since it happened. You know what caused their contentious relationship?
Who was?
Exactly. Yeah. Hey,
just
what's the theme of these grind topics? Pac-Man Jones and the chick, Chad and the chick. Never mind. Anyway,
girls of the world ain't nothing but trouble.
And I'm not female bashing, by the way, but ever since Kobe got involved with the young lady, him and his parents have had a contentious relationship, and the lawsuit is over with the memento, and our parents issue an apology. So, gentlemen, what do you think about the story?
Crazy thing is the settlement still, you know, allows the auction company, Golden Auctions, to sell six of those items. And according to the president of Golden Auctions, he says – that's cool with him because five of the six items, he said if he was able to choose six items from the door, he was like five of the ones he got would have been in the six that he chose. So he basically saying, you know, ain't no loss for me because he
making
some
money,
like $500,000 combined off of everything. Here's the apology. It was a written apology, emailed apology. It says, we regret our actions and statements related to the Kobe Bryant auction memorabilia. We apologize for any misunderstanding and unintended pain we may have caused our son and appreciate the financial support that he's provided to us over the years. And, you know, that says a lot, especially for all the people who just speculated that Kobe doesn't do anything for his parents and this and that. I mean, it probably was a case of, you know, you treat that girl's parents better than you treat us. But he's still in payback mode from Eagle, Colorado, so he got to do that.
Yo, I've come to
happy wife means happy life. Not, like, come on.
Not just with this story, but just in general, yo, this is like a sidebar, but it's really not. A lot of times when we like athletes or we root for athletes, yo, these dudes are idiots and a-holes off the court, field, et cetera, so I could care less about them. Because, you know, a lot of times when we're on Facebook and we start debating athletes and who's good and who's not good, people say, well, he treated his mom wrong or he beat his wife. Yo, I've come to the conclusion that everybody is an a-hole that plays professional sports, so it's all about what they do on the court. Because I think that story come out about Kobe, yo, he sounds like a complete creep. But he won chips for my squad, so I'm riding with him.
Dirtbag.
Dirtbags are winners.
And Austin knows exactly what I'm talking about because Mike is a creep. But at the end of the day,
yo, Mike, away from basketball, Mike is one of the worst human beings God ever made.
Yo, AI is a creep. We all love AI. He's a creep.
Yo, Jimmy's reaching to see if I'm going to respond. I ain't going to respond.
No, we all know AI is a creep. AI, you know, he's in trouble now, you know. But anyway,
MJ got little Asian kids making sneakers right now for 12 cents a day.
Yo, MJ is killing. He's killing Asian babies. He's walking around looking like a fool. I mean, Austin can say what he wants to say about Magic.
And y'all lining up around the corner to get this stuff that's killing Asian babies. Y'all should be ashamed of yourself.
Yo, all y'all that wear J's should be ashamed of yourself. Y'all all contribute to killing of Asian babies, yo. Anyway,
shame. I'm gonna go throw mine away.
Anyway. So far we have Adam. We have Adam Pac-Man Jones, his situation. We have Chad Johnson as a possible JoJo Award winner. Here's the last JoJo Award winner, and then I'm gonna let you gentlemen vote on who gets the JoJo Award. Eagles offensive tackle Jason Peters arrested for drag racing in Louisiana. He was drag racing. The police tried to stop him, so whoever he was drag racing was getting pulled over. My man kept going. But then decided after he kept going that I'm going to pull over anyway. So what was the point in going? And he was going in excess of 100 miles an hour.
Yo, he ran from the cops, Jimmy, and then finally pulled over at like a mall parking lot after he – yo, we need – as an Eagles fan, we need this dude. It's good to have him back. Hopefully he gets back to 2011 form. But I really don't care if they just throw this dude under the jail now. Because he's already been in trouble with the law down in Louisiana. So, they caught you. So you're just going to make it – you're going to compound the problem by speeding up and taking the police on a high-speed chase.
Is he from New Orleans? Because he's always in trouble down in there.
He's dumb. That's all I know.
Yo,
I mean,
man,
he's always he's always in Louisiana getting in trouble, so he must be from there.
Here's my question, though. Right? Well, here's my statement about this. I don't know if you guys ever used a service called Uber, U-B-E-R, but it's a service, right, where you have the app on your phone and you push a button and you send a town car to pick you up from wherever you're at. So it's like it's better than the taxi cab, it's better than the bus, and it's in a lot of major cities now. Yo, I suggest he start using this because every time he gets in trouble, it's always revolving around his car and something stupid he's doing. Remember, he got a
Hey, whoa. First of all,
disturbing
Uber got to cut a check. Uber got to cut the check.
Oh, yeah, no free plugs. You're right about that. But, oh, I love the service. So, you know, anyway, Uber cut the check, and I will be emailing this to you. But
Actually, Jason Peters, he's from Queen City, Texas, and went to college in Arkansas.
So he's just down in New Orleans. Uh-oh, Jimmy, you know what it is then. It must got something to do with a chick. He must got a lady down there, so.
Yo. So, gentlemen, here's the question. Who gets the JoJo Award of the Week? Is it Chad Ochocinco? Is it Jason Peters? Or is it Adam Pac-Man Jones? Dev, who do you think it is?
I'll give it to the high-speed chase man.
All right, Kill, who do you think gets the JoJo Award?
I give it to Pac-Man. Way too many accidents.
Pac-Man.
Pac-Man was defending himself. She deserved the Pac-Man.
Damn! Oh, Dev, you about to get up for a lot of female hate.
Whole life.
Yo, Dev, that is not consumer. Yo, anyway, B. Austin. B. Austin, who gets the JoJo Award of the Week, B. Austin?
While I'm inclined to join my brother Akil Bayon in saying Pac-Man just because of his history, I'm going to say Jason Peters, man. Jason Peters gets it.
So I think the consensus is, hey, Jason Peters, man.
You should be ashamed of yourself. The way you carry yourself.
Jason Peters should be ashamed of yourself.
Hey, I have a tidbit about Jason
Jimmy.
Peters that y'all might not
right
know
that.
About.
Nas ain't right there. Go ahead.
It will be. Go ahead, Kill.
Hey, Jason Peters played tight end and caught 4 passes for 37 yards as a sophomore, and he registered 21 catches for 218 yards and 4 touchdowns, and made him all second team all SEC. So should y'all
here's the thing
tight
about
end?
Now
here's the thing about
stupid.
Here's the thing about this, right? Jason Peters. Before he got hurt, was probably the best player on the team that year. Like, we're not. This has nothing to do with his football game because he was coming around. He struggled when he first got here, but then he started coming around, and he was one of the top players on the Birds. But
yo,
off the
Jason
field,
Peters,
man, he just
be the most athletic O lineman in the league.
Yeah, so
Jason Peters stupid.
Bad decision.
Jason Peters.
I think Dev just wrapped it all up with that statement. With that being said, man, those are the stories that happen while you're on the grind. Jason Peters, congratulations or not congratulations for winning the JoJo Award. Dev, give the birthday shout out to the week.
No doubt, it is birthday time in
my
the war
birthday.
Room.
Yay!
And of course, birthdays are brought to you by Dr. Monique Rowe of Alexandria Podiatry Associates for the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities. Visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area and beyond. So visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. And when you talk to them, make sure you tell them that the War Room sent you. All right. So birthday shout-outs to 1, Marvin Philip Offrichtig, better known as Marv Albert, who turned 72. What the hell? Where is he from? That his name is that. We should hear from him tonight, right? He's doing the finals broadcast, right?
Yeah. Marv Albert is a pervert. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Shout out to pervert Marv. Birthday shout out to Samuel Aaron Adams, better known Samuel Aaron Adams Jr., better known as Sam Adams, defensive tackle in the NFL. He turns 40. Raimondo Sarunas Marshallonis, better known as just Sarunas Marshallonis, former NBA player, turns 49 today. And our last birthday is one Hannah Storin, better known as Hannah Storm, who turns 51 today. Let me find out, they're over there using stage names like they're entertainers or something. But
that's crazy.
We like to give a nice big War Room salute to all these ladies and gentlemen on their birthdays.
Yay!
right.
Yeah, man.
And Dev, you know what you got? Question, Marv Albert, he was born in Brooklyn, comes from Jewish descent.
Okay.
Okay.
Marvin Philip Ofrichtig. All right, everybody, make sure y'all check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. It's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about the company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. Don't miss the boat. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download the free War Room Sports mobile app, which will be getting a huge upgrade in about a week or two. Not even an upgrade. You guys are going to have to download it all over again, but we will remind you. Because that's what we do. So right now, if you want to get in on these conversations, just join us in the JW Philly Realty chat room. The way you do that is blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you're too lazy to do that, just sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, just click follow so you can get updates and reminders about the show. Just in case we add a special show or we're not coming on for the week, you'll find out. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. So to call in and speak with us on the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline, call 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. And one more thing, make sure you visit warroomsportstv.com. Our latest recap, our NBA Finals recap for Game 3 is posted. And it's also, you know, a short preview for Game 4. So hurry up and get to that before that game comes on so you can tell us afterwards that we're genius. So let's get into some more hot topics. We got to pay some more bills real quick. If your schedule's too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. It's too easy. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you could be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the very same time. Fellas, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals are underway. Game 1 was probably one of the greatest Game 1s of a playoff series that I've ever seen. The Blackhawks beat the Boston Bruins in triple overtime. Did anybody anybody see this, or did you hear about it?
Yeah, I tried to watch it, but it was just going on way too long. And anybody knows I'm not a huge hockey fan. I'm not a huge hockey fan, but I'll try. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to try when you just keep going on and on, like, yo. So
playoff hockey is crazy, though, man. That's one of the better.
It really is. And I'm gonna be honest. I tuned in for 5 minutes, and when they weren't fighting, I tuned out.
Dude tuned in looking for a rumble.
I look at hockey for the rumbles.
I know the series is already underway, and you know we didn't get to do this prior to the series starting. But who you guys got? Boston or Chicago?
I got Chicago.
I got Chicago too.
I got Chicago and
more championships.
Title town. I got Chicago in 7 as well.
Yeah, I just don't want, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just tired, yo, because
Boston. I think
Boston
might have blew their load sweeping the Penguins, which was a surprise to a lot of people. And then, you know, there's a lot of sports fans out there who try to play the genius role. Like, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. No, you didn't. Shut up.
I got the Flyers in 1.
Serena wins her second French Open, the first since 2002. It's her 16th Grand Slam title overall. You know, we just want to say congrats to Serena Williams, number 1 female tennis player in the world. Has been the best, maybe not ranked number 1 the whole time, but in most people's eyes, she's been the best female tennis player for about the last decade or so. Did you guys notice she actually owned a home in Paris and is there quite often? Like, I didn't know that. I was kind of wondering how, after the match, she talked to the fans in fluent French. I'm like, damn, she's nice with it. But then she said she had a home in Paris, probably because she's trying to be all up in the fashion industry. And, you know,
listen,
that's
man,
one of the places
Serena,
to be if you want to be.
There's a God somewhere.
Sir.
So congrats to her. Boxing match from this past weekend. Chad Dawson. Mad Chad Dawson got his boot stretched, his wig split, with a one-hitter quitter.
You got
Donna
knocked
Stevens.
The fuck out.
Yo, did anybody see this match? Because if you didn't, all you had to do was go to YouTube. The match was only a minute and 15, 16 seconds.
Yo, I saw the whole fight, if you want to call it that. to me, it wasn't just a knockout that was funny. He got up and started doing a Humpty dance, though. Like,
yo, I don't know why, but I don't particularly care for Chad Dawson. So it was cool for me to see him get his boot stretched for the second fight in a row because, you know, he tried to go down to 168 and fight Andre Ward for his last fight, and Ward knocked him down like three times. He got a TKO out of that one. But this one, you know, he just got caught with a lucky left hook. And the whole time they've been touting Adonis Stevenson, saying, you know, he's a big puncher. And they don't think Chad has ever been in the ring with somebody who hits as hard as him. So if he was to catch
something, out for the hook.
It could be dangerous. And he caught something, and it was real dangerous. One hitter quitter. So I don't really know if this guy can really beat Chad Dawson. Because we didn't really get a chance to see a fight, but
well, we do know he can knock him out.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yo, Chad was straight doing a Humpty dance. He got up and started doing a Humpty. I want y'all to watch it, and you see exactly what I'm talking about. He said start backing up. I'm like, yo, he looked like Shock G up there. But anyway,
stop what you're doing. I'm about to.
I think the way I feel about Chad Dawson, I think that started with the first Bernard Hopkins fight when he was acting all, you know. He was acting a little too tough for my blood.
I figured that's what it was about.
Yeah, it's hometown bias. So, you know, he got his boot stretched. Tim Tebow is back, and he's with the Patriots.
Yes!
Anybody? Now, we know the Patriots' history of, you know, playing, letting people get in where they fit in. So do you guys think Tebow has any future on the New England Patriots as a quarterback? Like, if Tom Brady gets hurt, do you guys think, in a million years, that Bill Belichick would go to Tim Tebow?
Man, that's like asking, does God exist, man?
I think he will. I think they want to train. We'll let Tebow learn under Brady for 2 to 3 years because they know that he has all the intangibles of a QB. He just can't throw the football. So they figure in 3 years they can train him.
He just don't have the tangibles. He got the intangibles.
Yeah, he doesn't have the tangibles. So.
I mean, he has the intangibles of a linebacker, but he just can't play.
And I heard he's working on his body to slim out and so he can perfect his throwing motion and not be so bulky like he used to be.
Yeah,
so I think it's 3 years.
Talking about this guy, man. Like,
he's
a backup quarterback.
Man, he better slim down or fatten up and perfect his catching motion at tight end.
So I think I went from the contingency of people that rooted for him just because everybody hated him to starting to hate him just because, like, yo, you got the NHL playoffs going on, the NBA finals, and great baseball, and my man be leading off SportsCenter, and he doesn't do nothing.
Well,
like, yo.
Blame Belichick for that. What they pick him up?
You can't hate the man's anointing, man. I mean, that's not his fault. That, you know, the light shines brighter in his life than other people's, man, and we see it.
The Lord,
I am fully aware that his skill level is beneath zero, but he's a winner, and everyone hates him, so I'm a fan. I'm
beneath zero.
Yeah, he's future. He's future,
yeah.
But I'm a fan. I am definitely a fan. And
come on, man, you know the Tebow cliche, though? He's a winner.
He's a winner.
I'm down with that cliche where Tim Tebow is concerned. I'm with it.
He's a winner.
How many
angles? Never mind. All right, I really have nothing to say about this gentleman, yo.
All right, well, let's talk a little while about Dennis Rodman and some comments he made late last week. Dennis Rodman basically said that in the late 80s and the 90s, LeBron James would be an average player, and he's tired of this comparison with Michael Jordan. Let's get into this. Do you guys do those comments have any merit? Do you guys think LeBron would be just an average player in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, what Rodman cites is that, you know, Jordan did what he did in a way more physical era. He's like, all they do now is complain about fouls and this and that. And he also said his Bulls team, his best Bulls team, would be no contest against the Heat. Like, they would kill the Heat. So what do y'all think about these comments?
Why do
legends just go at LeBron all the time?
Listen, it's Dennis Rodman, yo. I respect Rodman's basketball IQ, but at the end of the day, I think that LeBron wouldn't have been an average player. Now, the second part in terms of his team, the way they would have beat that team, I agree with that because that Bulls team, after Michael came back from playing baseball, they were just in sync. And it's possibly I'm just overrating right now because I just finished reading Phil Jackson's book, which I got at audibletrials.com/warroomsports. But anyway, it's just that they were a real team. Someone made a comment on our video today on warroomsportstv.com, of course, and they were talking about the Miami Heat and how they still aren't a complete team. Like, they still haven't gelled as a team, and they're just a collection of talent that plays well, but they still don't have, you know, the whole aspect of being a cohesive team where you know where your player is going to be. And a lot of times you can see that in these games, especially with Bosh being Dale Curry. But we'll get into that later. But the point of Robin's team beating this team handily, I agree with that. I don't think LeBron would have been an average player, though. That's easy to do.
Dennis Rodman said, I would take Bosh out of this damn game easy. That's not even a problem.
And he said Scotty
would guard LeBron easy.
I think if Kawhi Leonard can give LeBron problems, then I have faith in Scottie Pippen being able to do that. But here's my thing. We all know my history and some of the comments that I've made about LeBron. But what I don't do is I don't slight him in terms of his ability. And I think that Rodman went overboard with the comment because LeBron, being completely objective and honest, LeBron would be a superstar in any era. And that goes for 1945 to 2445. LeBron, the combination of size and skill and athleticism, he definitely would have been able to thrive in any era. Now, that's not to say that he wouldn't have had trouble with Bulls or that he's better than Michael Jordan, because I don't believe that. But I do think Rodman got a little carry.
Do you think, because, you know, a lot of people try to deny it, but it was more of a physical game back then. Mm-hmm. The guys now are bigger and stronger, but with the rules being in place the way they are, they're not really able to use that, at least not in the ways that they did back then with the hand checking and the, you know, hard fouls that would be flagrant now would just be regular fouls back then. Do you think that any of that in that era would get to LeBron mentally? Because we know
mentally,
how big and strong
he is.
But do you think he can be an all-star in that era, you know, getting that kind of punishment and not getting babied for it kind of like they do now?
Well, you have to understand that his psyche would then change and adapt to that. I think that LeBron has to, and we talked about this, you know,
You say that, but 10 years in, we're still talking about his psyche now.
I'm going to get to that. I still think that he would be able to dominate and thrive in most situations. But what we're seeing now of LeBron is the type of dude that has to be goated, that has to be turned on to give you that aggression. Whereas a lot of the players that he's compared to, they walked around with aggression. And I'm not even talking about guys like Reggie. I'm not talking about Michael Jordan. I'm talking about guys like Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller had a chip on his shoulder 24/7 that probably made him better than his talent actually was. When you look at guys like
Chip on my shoulder if I look like that too. Oh,
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there was no need to goad those players into a level of aggression that I think LeBron has to conjure up. And so that's a big difference. I look at LeBron mentally in the same line or facet as I look at Chris Webber. Obviously, he's way more talented than Chris Webber, but he's a stat monster. He's going to get his stats, but he just doesn't have the will to put the knife under your chin, step on your skull, and smile. It's just not there.
Right.
I agree with Rodman in terms of the Bulls kind of just running through the heat. But in terms of LeBron just being an average player, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, Alex English was one of my favorite players and put up 30-some years, and he wasn't considered an average player, you know. So even if you say, okay, LeBron would have been Alex English, I mean, he's still getting 30 a game. So I
think he's dominant.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd still be an all-star. So I think, you know, he doesn't have the mental toughness, at least yet, consistently as Jordan and as a Bird and maybe as a Magic and even as Wade in his prime. So, I mean, there's certain things that he's – or even Kobe. So there's just certain things that he has to get. Like right now, he needs to go in the post, but I'm hearing that different coaches in the past have wanted him to go in the post, but he doesn't like the post, doesn't have anything to do with the post, but just kind of reluctantly has done it over the last year and a half. But you notice when
Joe, that's a great point, and I'd like to ask you, does size and height play a factor in posting someone up? Because Jimmy and
I mean,
had this.
I saw the whole debate. I mean, size does help. That's why they go for seven footers or people with girth. But you don't necessarily need to have the size to be a great post up person. You know,
thank
but
you.
You had,
thank you.
But you
no,
had,
no, no, no. But that wasn't that was never my point though. I agreed with you that you don't have to, but it gives you an advantage. So at having 3 inches height advantage and 40 pounds, LeBron needs to be in the post dominating.
So you're basically saying, Austin, if somebody had, like, if you're about to draft two players who have pretty good post games, you know what I'm saying, you definitely want the bigger, stronger unless the smaller dude was just exceptional, like a Charles Barkley or something like that. Is that kind of what you're
saying? Exactly, and that was my
point.
Thanks
you're saying,
for capturing
no,
my point
no,
in 30
seconds. But you're not listening. I said that most post players haven't been the tallest players. You said with all things being equal, you'll take the taller guy. That makes sense. That's in any sport of any profession. I mean,
right,
if you're playing quarterback
point,
and everything,
equal between Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James. They're not equal.
What do you mean? If LeBron James doesn't have a post game, then of course things are like – what do you mean they're not equal? In terms of what? In terms of just size? In terms of post
LeBron,
game?
LeBron James
you said LeBron doesn't have a post
Brody,
game.
Shouldn't be able
did
to
you
just
say,
Brody
did,
Leonard.
But
really?
Did you say LeBron doesn't have a post game?
No, I said
isn't
it's
that what
developed.
You said?
No,
you
I said
he doesn't
developed.
Have one. Listen,
so,
no,
I
didn't argument for the show
he,
anyway, man.
Never said
all things aren't equal. You're saying if all things are equal, you take the bigger guy. That's common sense. If all things are equal as a quarterback, you take the bigger
Uh-oh,
guy.
Oh, he's flip-flopping,
if all things are equal
y'all.
As a kicker.
He's flip-flopping. I caught him on air.
I'm not flip-flopping. What I told you was during a history of the game, and I can go back to 1942, the best post players of any generation haven't been the biggest players. I can give you any name you want at any position, and it's not always the biggest player. That's what I said.
But, Jim, we
exactly.
never disagreed.
Exactly.
I never
exactly.
disagreed.
They were kind of –
Listen, man, you can add it.
Players
are
definitely the exception. But my thing, what I think I'm getting from you, especially in the LeBron James situation, B. Austin, is that void of him having any post moves or anything, you think he should be able to just big boy Kawhi Leonard. See, but Kawhi Leonard is a skilled defender. Like, we can't just slight him like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You know
and your
saying?
Point was, he's 6'8", this. He should be doing this to Kawhi Leonard. But you're just dismissing the fact that Kawhi Leonard is a skilled defender, and you just pointed to
like,
his
I don't,
side.
I don't see –
You can't just point to
Paul
his side.
George.
He doesn't have a post game.
I think Paul George is a pretty good perimeter defender, but once he gets down there, like, I just don't think he knows how to guard in the post, so LeBron made it look easy against him. I think Kawhi has, you know, come on, you're studying under Pop, Tim Duncan, you know, some of the best post teachers and post players of NBA history. So, you know, I think he has a lot
Austin,
more with him.
The whole debate started with you saying, look at his size,
yes,
he should be dominating. And my response
yes.
was, so what of his size? That doesn't mean he's going to dominate because of his size. And that's how we got
because
into the whole debate. And I still agree with
when
that.
LeBron came in the league until now, he has worked on his post game. He has developed a bit of a footwork, some footwork. He has a
So now you're flip-flopping. You said your exact words, and I have it right here. He has no post game.
Now you're saying he's the
relative,
footwork.
Relative,
when right
relative
here, your
what,
words, he has no footwork.
At 6'9 and 270, relative.
That was now his relative?
Had.
Your exact words
relative
in front of my eyes right now. He has no footwork.
The greatest
he
player in the world.
No
playing,
post game.
Playing the three, swing four. Shouldn't he have more post game than that? Number one. And number
no,
two, at
my,
his
my
size,
question,
shouldn't he just be
okay
able to gank your buckets? He
let me ask you
Let me talk.
You said he has no post game. You said he has no footwork. These are your words I'm reading right now. So now you're telling me it's relative.
You might have to screenshot
either,
that for
either
Twitter.
He has it
you might
or he
have to screenshot that for Twitter to see.
Dog,
I don't believe you need more
people. You said he has no post game. He has no footwork.
Kawhi Leonard was making it look like he had no post game.
Now it's what Kawhi Leonard's making it look like. The bottom line is he should be dominating.
Sure is.
He should be dominating based just on size, and that means nothing.
Well,
that
we
means
can take
nothing
a poll.
Think,
we can take a
I think
poll.
If he wants to be great,
if you're 6'9
be a great
and
player,
270
should be.
And the best player in the world, you should be able to get buckets in the post on Kawhi Leonard. Shout out to Kawhi Leonard because you are a heck of a defender and you're showing it in this series.
No,
but I still
though
think that LeBron James
listen,
should
man
be able to get buckets on you.
Okay, you got way off topic. By the way, Leroy McConnell from Twitter says LeBron would excel in any era, so he doesn't, you know, think what Bobby says is valid. LeBron
wait
also
minute, he said what? LeBron
brother
would have what?
He would excel in any era. And he also says LeBron needed a big brother to toughen him up as a kid. That's why he lacks the killer instinct.
Need a father.
He said because he doesn't have a sibling rivalry. How about a pop at home? Anyway,
yeah,
that's a whole other story.
Hey, man.
Hey, to be LeBron to be a great player though, I think he has to be able to take his guy in the post. Like when Magic saw MJ on him, he said, "You know what? I'm taking him into the post." When Kobe sees people his height or bigger or smaller, he takes them in the post. Jordan took everybody into the post. Bird took
and a kill.
And
a kill. I think even like Gary Payton and Jason Kidd back in the day. But
yeah.
I think with those guys, it was natural. It was a natural reaction. Like, oh, I got a mouse in the house. LeBron, when he was abusing Paul George in the post, it seemed like that was the game plan because the very next game, they went away from it. So it's like, if you don't tell me to do it, coach, I'm not going to do it. And
yeah,
I think he could make, as easy as LeBron makes the game look sometimes, as easy as he makes the game look sometimes, I think he could make the game even that much more easy by, you know, trying to develop a post game. Now, he did make the effort and go see the dream.
Doesn't some of that fall on Spo, too?
See, well, making him do it? I mean, come on.
No, what I'm saying is
you're the best player in the league, though. You can't be babied through every play. You can't look
to
the sideline every play.
He doesn't like it.
No, listen,
like they try
I
to
totally
do it, but he doesn't like
I
it.
I totally get that. But my thing is, based upon what you just said, it was in the game plan, so he did it.
Yeah.
And it worked
oh,
like
no,
magic.
No, no, yeah. Definitely.
So
but,
my thing
but
is, why should
we can also LeBron also has the power to do what Akil just said, though. If he's going to say, I don't really like doing that, was Spo going to force him to do it? We know
well,
who wins.
Sucker,
you know, in today's league, fun who wins, even in yesterday's league, we know who wins risks between
ain't got no power
players. Yeah, so,
I mean, I get all that.
You know,
I
he don't
want to
do
that's
it,
the case,
you can't really force him to.
That's okay. He's a sucker then. And if I was Spo, I'm putting him out there in the media. I told him he gets big ass in the post and he won't do it. Simple
yeah
as that.
See, but I don't agree with Robin's comments because I think average is that's
yeah,
just too
yeah,
strong
that
of
was
a word.
That was an insult.
Yeah,
that
it,
was an
it's
insult
too strong
that
of a
I
word
caught at someone
but
that
we,
usually
we
insults LeBron like he's tripping.
Yo,
but we have to remember.
Average is like Willie Anderson. Average is Willie and Chandon Anderson.
We have to remember,
he
though,
been,
Rodman
he
is
been as
known
good as Terry Cummings.
Rodman is known for making these comments. Remember, he was the one who originally said, if Larry Bird was white, he'd just be an average player. And you know, Isaiah Thomas took it in.
He
admitted
he was
black.
Black.
Yeah, if he was, I said if he's white. And then, you know, Isaiah Thomas took it and ran with it, and he gets all the credit for it. But Dennis Rodman is actually the person who said that. So, you know, he has a history of slighting dudes that he probably don't care
yeah,
for.
Yeah, and he does it on purpose because we're talking about it now.
Now, I don't
yeah,
think in any of those
flight
eras that he would – head and shoulders be the best player in the league like he is now, you know, he might be like one of those all-stars that we see every year,
Terry
you know,
Cummings,
who are good
Terry
players,
Cummings,
but they don't really seem like they belong in the game. He could teeter around that and just perennial all-star, but he's not going to be an average player in any era. He's just
yeah,
he has
not,
some
not at all.
Tools.
Is it Terry yeah Cummings?
Terry was tougher.
especially with the centers. Like, I think LeBron would have been scared of going to the hole with the centers. Because think, Hibbert is just one. But you had so many other big centers, even some that weren't even that good, just clogging up
the
lane.
The Davis brothers in Indianapolis. Yeah.
And they LeBron had no publicly admitted prior to that series that he was working on a floater because of Hibbert.
Yo, when you're 6'9", you can't shoot floaters.
You can't even say floater. You can't even say the word floater.
Yo, listen, we don't even respect, as good as Antoine Jameson is, we don't respect him because his name is Antoine and he shoots floaters and he's 6'9". Like, come on, man. You 6'9", talking about a floater. What?
All right, well, yeah, so we all seem to disagree with Dennis Rodman, think he's tripping a little bit. You got to give LeBron more props than that. Everything else he said may be on point. You know, the Jordan comparisons, maybe they need to stop. Let LeBron be LeBron because, you know, he and Mike don't have much in common.
Not at all.
The Bulls team, I think a lot of people would agree, you know, except for new fans, that the Bulls team probably run through them like it was nothing. But, yeah, but all this other stuff, this average stuff, I think that's
too
much.
Yeah, tripping.
So the NBA coaching carousel is in full effect. We know Lionel Hollins was asked back by the Grizzlies, who had their best season in franchise history. So that's kind of like a situation with Vinny Del Negro and the Clippers. Six coaches who coached in the playoffs this season are without jobs right now. That's kind of where a few of them were interim coaches, so they weren't going to be there anyway. But, like, people like Lionel Hollins, Vinny Del Negro come to mind. It's like, how are these guys losing their jobs?
Especially George Karl. I mean, George
and George,
Karl.
Yeah, and George Karl, another team that, you know, had, like, nobody expected them to have that season. Coach of the year, gone.
Prisoner
of the moment. And he's not somebody who was new at this. Like, George Karl has a reputation for being a good coach. Now,
yeah,
I always thought George Karl was a little overrated as a coach, but he
damn,
can't get fired.
Why do you think he's overrated?
I just think he is. Up until now, getting fired for nothing, I just thought that George Karl got a level of respect that he really hasn't earned. I mean, I guess the best coaching job would have been. Nah. Come on, you know. George Karl's teams, in my opinion, I mean, I guess until it depends on the team, I guess. But, like, back when he had Gary Payton and, you know, they had a great team, he and Sean Kemp, you know, you had Gary Payton leading the way as far as defense was concerned. You know, you had his backup, Nate McMillan, who was defensive-minded. But I never really thought that George Karl pressed the issue with defense. You know what I'm saying? So I thought he got props when his overall coaching game wasn't all the way up to par. You know, the Nuggets team was low with Iverson. They didn't play any D. The Bucks didn't play
any D. In Seattle, he did for some reason. In Seattle, they were all about D, but I don't know what happened.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think it depends on your players, though.
But I think that's what he tried to do. I mean, if you have Gary Payton and Nate McMillan and you have Allen Iverson and Carmelo, you know damn well you ain't going to try to play D with AI and Carmelo, but you know that
no,
it's Nate McMillan and GP.
See, but that's what
I
I'm
think
saying.
Tried,
yeah.
I
mean,
I think he tries to adjust to what he has.
If you look at his personnel, though, I would say every time the personnel dictated it, you know, his teams play pretty good D. So I don't know if I want to give him all that credit. Cats like Gary Payton wants to play D. Andre Iguodala and a couple of dudes they have now, that's what they do. They play D.
I guess we're saying
you can still preach it when you don't have those guys. You got to make.
But what I'm saying is, he may have preached it, but them dudes just didn't play it. You know what I'm saying? It's like the message could have been there, but AI and Carmelo could have took it a different way.
It's just nothing about those teams that didn't play it. Nothing about their effort, you know, told me that it was being preached.
I just look at his team.
I've only ever seen Melo give effort to D like twice. So I see where Jimmy's coming from. Like, you can talk about defense till you're blue in the face to AI and Melo. AI is incapable at six foot nothing, and Melo just doesn't know how.
No, so my thing is this, though. What I'm saying is, when you talk about George Karl as a coach, I don't know where I would rank him all time, but we're not even talking about all time. But I think that the level of respect he gets, because, I mean, you know, you also have the whole cancer thing, so it's a little sympathy there. And I shouldn't have said that, but I did. Oh, well, FOH. But at the end of the day, he's won everywhere he's been. He's had some pretty good teams. The Milwaukee team that, you know, They lost in game seven because the NBA won the AI play in the finals. But also,
I think he's a good, very good coach, but I don't put him in the great category.
Yeah,
but
the Seattle team just ran into a situation where they had 60-something wins that season.
Yeah, they ran into the same
team
situation.
That had 72.
Yeah, he ran into a situation that the Jazz, the Knicks, the
yeah,
Suns, they ran
the
into
that
same
it,
that situation.
Season, that season they had was special. They were three games away from the NBA's all-time record, but they just happened to play against a team that just beat the record. You know what I'm saying? They had like 66 wins that season and were running through the West like it was nothing. And they even gave the Bull. They won like two games in that series. You know what I'm saying? So it just ran to that team. And then after that, they couldn't get past Olajuwon. So he ran into some good teams. But I think he's a good coach. Definitely a good coach.
You know me and the whole championship thing, though, man. No matter how much people preach that is just not the end of it.
That's what made me ask the question.
Sports go on.
I know you're not one of those guys that say he didn't win anything.
But somebody who
wouldn't ask the question.
Somebody who would be on my side of the debate, that would probably be their main thing. You didn't win a championship.
And that probably would.
People don't realize how hard it is to win a championship. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, look at this. Larry Brown won his one championship, right? And if he didn't win that championship, that wouldn't take away from his ability to coach. Now, he's also another scumbag who, like, leaves teams dry and all that. But at the end of the day, you can't knock his ability to coach and try to get the best out of players. Now, he wears thin after a while. And, you know, what's the nickname they call him in the NBA? Leave Town Brown? Leave Town Brown. Oh, he's a scumbag, man. But I'm just saying, like, his ability to coach can't be questioned, though. It can't be questioned. And regardless of whether he won that one championship or not,
Larry Brown always won the challenge.
Yeah. So where do the Grizzlies go from here? Like, why would they not?
This is
one of those things. Remember we spoke about the Clippers. This is what I'm talking about, man. Remember we on the show we talked about when the Clippers did this same thing. We were saying how, okay, the Clippers are getting it twisted. You are in the L.A. market, but you aren't the team in the L.A. market. So let's not act like this is the most, you know, sought-after destination there is, even though they're having kind of – they're flirting with Doc Rivers. But that aside, Memphis is even a worse situation as far as, you know, people actually wanting to go there. So how are you going to have the best season that the team has ever had and not re-sign a coach who wanted to come back? I don't get it. I don't see everybody knocking down the door to go coach in Memphis.
Being a prisoner at the moment is not just about the fans.
What do you mean by that, though, Austin? What do you mean what are they a prisoner at the moment of?
I think that these front office guys have seen recent success, and they're overrating the value of their franchises, the value of that success they've had, and the value and what they have on the court, thinking that we can afford to let go of someone that has built the franchise or helped build the franchise to this point, and we'll just go after a marquee name. We'll just go after a famous guy or a big name guy and bring him in, and we're you know, three quarters of the way there, and we'll let him take us across the finish line. And I think that's a prisoner
like
of the moment outlook. They're prisoners
to
the moment.
Or do you think it's like the Phil Jackson effect? Like they just think that we just need somebody to get us over the hump. Is it one of those things? Because
that in and of itself is a prisoner of the moment outlook for those types of franchises, because they don't have the track record of success to even feel like they can fire a guy that's helped them build to this point. It's not like these guys have built the franchise to the point where three or four seasons consecutively they've hit a plateau. They've gotten here, and they're like, all right, cool, thanks, see ya.
Jimmy, talking about that getting over the hump, they're definitely over or underestimating that hump. It's like you're riding down one of them streets where you see a speed bump, but it doesn't look like it's that big, so you try to go over it kind of fast, and you bust
mess
your car
your
up because you didn't, So that's what I think that's what these coaches are
doing.
There's
some big names like – you know what I'm saying? Like you got the Brian Shaw name, and you got the Doc Rivers names floating out there. People still trying to bring Phil back.
Why can't Brian Shaw get a job?
Brown back.
Should Brian Shaw go to the Mike Brown School of Interviewing?
Yeah, his interviews must be horrible because you hear his name floating around for the last decade. Yeah,
he won't even get an opportunity.
And Mike Brown, but he said Mike Brown comes to interviews with like flow charts and I'm not even joking about this. I was listening to an LA radio station. They were talking about when he first interviewed for the Lakers job. Like he came with like presentations, you know, notes and everything. He didn't just come empty handed. And they said his,
then when
his
get on the court,
game is immaculate.
You get on the court, none of it flows. But
How about that? But,
yeah, so it has to be something with Brian Shaw, man. It can't just be bad luck because, like Jimmy said, his name is always in the mix for a new coaching job, and he keeps getting passed over. It's gotten to the point where Jason Kidd just took off his uniform, came out the locker room, and stepped onto the sideline.
Yo, my man
Jimmy said he's not going to miss one bi-weekly check,
but in our chat room we have Jetty Mar. Shout out to Jetty Mar just chimed in. He said the Holland situation is because Memphis doesn't want to pay Holland. So he, you know, basically is due a raise because of his success over the last couple of years, and they have new ownership, so they're trying to go cheap.
Wow. Back so, down in the basement you go.
They're going to get Kevin Ollie to be their coach.
They're going to hire Mike Conley's dad, and they don't even play ball.
Hey, yo, I have a prediction. So we have six teams that made the playoffs that fired their coaches. And these are the L.A. Clippers, Denver Nuggets, Memphis Grizzlies, New Jersey Nets, Atlanta Hawks, and Milwaukee Bucks. And I'm going on the limb to say that none of these teams will have a better record next year than they had this year, for the exception of if Phil Jackson or Doc Rivers coaches one of those teams.
Yeah.
All right.
It's
interesting, man. What do you got, Bjorsen? I heard you saying a little something. You think the Jason Kidd hire is a terrible hire? Explain that.
Yeah.
Briefly.
I think that.
How can you say that already, though? Like, he coached one game. My man didn't get a practice in yet.
No.
It's a terrible hire.
I think that Jason Kidd, at some point, if his understanding of the game and his IQ translates, could be a great coach. But going from in the game as a player to the head coach of a franchise, I don't think that works without paying your dues and because seeing the game from that perspective, you still don't have enough of the player's competitive nature out of your bloodstream to coach effectively. I think he could be an exception. No, I wasn't done. He could be an exception, but I doubt it. So I'm going with that as a terrible hire.
Now, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting to give my opinion because I want to see who he puts together in terms of a staff, because I think that makes all the difference. A lot of these coaches who come off the court who want to coach, if they put together a nice staff and they spend money on a staff, it could help that learning curve. So,
well, Jim,
Jimmy's
right. He absolutely has to. He has to have a great staff.
Jetty Mar said when Bird went, he just let his assistants coach the game.
See, because I think it's a situation. The only reason I'm a little bit skeptical, because y'all know I'm a Jason Kidd stan, so you know I'm happy for the dude. And if they're, you know, because people use that cliche before, like, yeah, he's so smart. As soon as he takes the shoes off, he's gonna go right to the sideline. But you know, we've never actually seen somebody really do it. But it's happening now with him, and I think like he was such a smart player. You know, knowing the game is not going to be his problem. I think the only problem that he could possibly run into is just the change of lifestyle. So whole lifestyle change to be a professional coach. You know what I'm saying? Your schedule is different. You know, you're on the road with these guys and they're doing stuff. They're either hanging out or even just chilling. You know, you got to be down busting it up with the assistants in the rooms in the hotels, just going over strategy, watching film 24 hours a day when you're not playing. It's a different lifestyle. So what Jimmy said is essential for him. He definitely has to have the best staff that he could possibly have, because he can probably convey to players, you know, on how to play the game and what they should do, but he still needs people to lean on to get used to life as an NBA coach. Like,
he's still
Mark Jackson didn't have any experience either. Do y'all remember a time when Mark Jackson's name? But he was analyzed.
Debbie used to get mad. Why did you talk about Mark Jackson?
Like Mark Jackson's name used to keep coming up, and I'm like, yo, Mark Jackson has never sat on the sideline. Why is he always a front runner for these jobs? But you know, at the very least, he got 8 years to analyze the game from the sideline, and he was already a smart player. So far, I think, to
your point about staffing and relationships you need to build and to have as a coach, I think people gave Mark Jackson the benefit of the doubt, understanding that he had forged a lot of those positive relationships that he would need to bring in a staff versus Jason Kidd, who maybe he has been forging these relationships. I know for the past 4 seasons or 5 seasons with USA Basketball, he's been an unofficial coach. You know, so he's been looking at coaching for at least a half a decade, but I just don't see it. I don't see the transition being that smooth. I see him in the long run being successful.
You also have to remember, though, he's going to a team that can pretty much make the playoffs, whether Jason Kidd was coaching
or not. Yeah, you're right.
So he has some leeway. They might not live up to any deep expectations, but they're going to go to the playoffs because
now
of
the talent.
Now,
here's my thing. I'll just reserve judgment until we see how you put the staff together. Jenny Martin Chatwin says that he thinks that Lawrence Frank will be his head assistant coach, and Lawrence
Frank
has experience.
I guarantee you he will. He will hire him.
Yeah, so Lawrence Frank has experience in running an entire organization, so he would have to lean heavily on him. So that's why I just want to reserve judgment until that happens. But I do think that you made a great point, Dev, in terms of knowing the difference time-wise from being a coach to a player, because, you know, not to keep, you know, bringing it up again, but just reading that book again, which you can get at audibletrial.com/Wharton Sports for free, by the way. The way
Jimmy,
that
that's why,
Jackson
that's why
and other coaches
Jason
break
Kidd
down
didn't
says,
score.
The amount of time they put into it.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's why Jason. That's why he didn't score for like the last 3 weeks of his career, because he was really coaching out there. He wasn't.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, you know, he wasn't trying to score. He was coaching. He was trying to set the team up.
Coaching JR and Melo. Okay.
It just backfired on the Knicks. So real quick before we get into the NBA Finals talk, man, let's talk a little bit. I just want to know how you guys felt about the documentary, the NBA TV documentary, The Doctor, on Julius Erving. Did y'all think the piece was well done?
I think it was a well done piece, but it fell short in a lot of ways as well.
Yeah, I've already watched it twice.
I mean, I watched it 3 times, but no, I'm joking. I did watch it more than once. I watched it twice, but not 3 times. I'm joking. But the thing is, the reason I say it fell short, we all know some of the other things that Doc went through, which weren't mentioned. Not that you slander a man when doing a piece, but you have to show, you know, the entire man. You know what I mean?
He's a hero
to all of us. I'm not even talking about the Coca-Cola. I'm talking about the Teddy Pendergrass situation. I'm talking about the young daughter he has that plays tennis.
Yeah, you know, you see how they kind of try to make it seem like he and his wife broke up because they couldn't take, you know, losing
reconcile their son, and then they didn't really mention the fact that
Doc had an illegitimate child.
Yeah, Doc had a young lady. He shot her club up, and you know what I'm saying. Like, so you have to, like, when you're painting a picture of someone, I think that you kind of do them a disservice to make it seem like there are no faults there. Now, Doc was a great person. He was a role model to a lot of us by the way he carried himself. The fact that he was the best player in our hometown team as we were growing up. And
here
he was
is my hometown baby.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, you know, we all love Doc. Who doesn't love Doc? As a matter of fact, Doc may be the only player, in my opinion, that it doesn't even matter who you root for, you love Doc.
Yeah, that's true. He's a cool dude.
He wasn't without faults, but that's what makes him great. You know what I mean? Like, he still
has his
faults.
Chief fault was not having a left hand, and it didn't even matter.
Yeah, I mean, in that era, when he was in his prime, he was way too good for that to even matter. Like Jimmy said, he called him a revolutionary player, and he was that because Doc took the game from the floor into the air. You know, when he was in college, he couldn't even dunk. You know what I'm saying? The NBA had rules against dunking at that time, but the ABA, you know, they let him be who he was. And
he shot
a little bit of
Hawkins, because he was also Connie Hawkins was also one of those guys.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to the Hawk. Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Jimmy in the fact that responsibility of the filmmakers you know, they probably fell a little short on not giving you the entire story. But what I think the piece did for a lot of folks, especially young folks, is to allow them to see to see basketball in a different light, because, you know, they think everything started with Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Michael
right.
Jordan may, in a lot of people's eyes, be the greatest player ever, but Michael Jordan did not invent basketball. And I'm not saying Dr. J did, but this is just a good look, you know, as everybody thinks Michael Jordan is. He looked up to somebody, too. He emulated somebody, too, you know, and he admitted that openly back then. So,
yeah,
you know.
Dr. J and David Thompson.
Yeah, it's a little difficult when you hear young dudes walking around saying, well, you know, Mike was the first to do this, Mike was the first to do that. That's not really true, you know?
Right.
That's not
right.
really true. And when Jimmy talks about revolutionary players, I'd put Michael Jordan in that mix, but it's not necessarily for what he did on the court. I think Mike revolutionized the game as far as, you know, being a brand, because now that's what everybody's
branding.
Doing now.
Yeah.
But even that, he didn't start it, because Doc was that dude before Mike was. There just wasn't that kind of money in it back when Doc was doing it. Doc was the spokesman for everything back then, but it just wasn't the same kind of money. So, you know, it's good to let the young people see something a little different.
I appreciate both perspectives, you know, Jimmy and Deb, because, you know, if you are looking at the quality and historicity of the piece, then, yeah, with a critical eye, they definitely, you could tell that they played up to Doc himself, because he had some role in this, and they were real friendly, you know, and there were things left out. There definitely were things left out. If you wanted to make this truly a unbiased, objective documentary, then you got to put the good and the bad in, and they didn't do that. But I think it kind of even created a new lane where you could say it's not so much a documentary but a nonfiction story piece, because it covered a lot of the positives. It covered a lot of the positives, and as you said, Deb, it gave the younger generation that pays attention to NBA TV and the social media buzz that this film got, it gave them a look into who Doc is and what that generation was about. So, you know, I appreciated it for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a good piece in the fact that, like Jimmy said, this was a hometown hero, so...
You know, you love to see that story get told.
Like, it made me
NBA
really
Network
nostalgic.
No, Doc was so cool, yo. Doc was a cool dude.
Big-ass afro.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because when you see how some of these players act now, it just makes you appreciate him even more. Now, everybody back then didn't act like that. I mean, Doc also played on a team with Barkley, and we know how Barkley has always acted. But
he
Doc
wasn't
was,
drawing in a noodle.
And Doc
yeah,
spoke
Doc,
in King's
Doc,
English, too, always.
Yeah, he
just
spoke
in
King's
speaking.
English, but he was a consummate gentleman. Like, I mean, it was everything. You know what I'm saying? Even the way he carried himself off the court. But here's the thing, though. I was saying the NBA Network has put together some great pieces, because they're responsible for that Dream Team piece, which was amazing. Even the show with the Round Table. I'm like, they're doing a good job in terms of what they're doing with the NBA the Network. In my personal opinion, we have the NFL Network, NBA Network, Major League Baseball. I think they do the best job in terms of creating original content and, you know, putting their programming on, because the NFL Network just does nothing but, you know, go into the vault and get stuff we've seen a million times and keep putting it on repeat.
Yeah.
So I want to see what they have coming up. Like, I want to see what other players they chronicle, because there's some great stories out there in terms of the players we grew up watching. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like I said, and I like it mostly for the fact that it gives younger fans a look into the past, and, you know, gives them a different perspective, and they don't think that everything they're seeing now is the end all be all, the invention of great basketball, because that's definitely not true. And it was crazy. Oh no, I was about
I've
to
only
say
did
because
two.
Who?
No,
I was just about to say.
83 was one of them.
Yeah, I was just about to talk about that, because it brought back memories. Like we were what, six? I was about to turn
five,
six at the time, but I remember the day they swept the Lakers. I remember that like it was yesterday. Like, back then you had the little floor model TV, so we sitting in the dining room eating, but we turned the TV around so we could see the game while we were eating dinner. When the joint was winding down, my pop went into the closet and got a broom out. And when the time was ticking off the clock, the dude bust out the door, running in the street with the broom, screaming, "Sweep." And I heard all this noise out in the street, but like I was telling people, I couldn't go outside. I was too young. But you just heard everybody outside screaming and celebrating, and you know, it's like you missed that feeling because our city isn't really
a
city
of
winners.
By earlier,
so you kind of
this is what I mean by earlier
feeling.
Saying Boston, FOH to Boston, because just
yeah,
look over
don't get
the
that feeling
decade,
no
I think
they win all the time.
Every major sport, I think they won one in baseball, football,
yeah, they
basketball,
won one in
hockey,
ping pong.
Like, yo, that's
yo,
it's kind of unfair, yo. That's Boston, man. I'm sorry.
Boxing.
Spoiled.
When you think about it, like the Phillies parade a couple years ago, which is now starting to get old, as a matter of fact. But anyway, that parade and the 82 parade are the only two I've ever attended in my life. One was as a kid and one was as an adult. I just hope it's another one that happens in this city before I die sometime. Doesn't look that way right now, but, you know, I'm still holding out hope.
Man, Drew Holiday going to be at home for Jerome.
Yeah. Once he joined the Lakers.
Yo, right, speaking of 83, Dev, one more thing. One more thing, yo. What you think about Cheeks to Detroit? Because, you know, he was on that team.
Oh, yeah. I love Mo Cheeks to death. But he hasn't really proven that much to me as a coach to, you know, keep getting recycled. I heard a lot of people say it's a great hire, this and that. I think Mo Cheeks is a dude that players want to play for. He's a nice dude. He helps little girls with the national anthem when they're struggling. He was a great point guard, so he knows the game. But I just haven't seen Cheeks. I mean, but it's one of those things where maybe you can't blame him because I think with all coaches – if you don't have much talent, then you're not going to do much. Not to say
he
that he didn't have talent in Portland.
He got Austin's favorite player, though. He got Austin's favorite
Philly
player.
Philly ain't that much talent, but in Portland, you know, he had pretty good talent. But
I always got this
impression. Detroit.
Go ahead, Dev.
No, I'm just saying, it's Detroit. They suck. Give them a shot. But go ahead, kid.
Yeah, no, I always got the impression that Cheeks was too soft-spoken to be a good NBA coach. Like, I feel like, I mean, you could be a nice person, and you don't even have to curse, but you got to be able to get mean enough to get in guys' face to get them to do what you want them to do.
And I agree with that. I think his players love him, but like Akil said, I don't think like on the court they're gonna run through a wall for him because he doesn't seem to demand that.
So, they love him. You know, they love him because they can get away with whatever they can get away with.
Exactly. Because I think he's the type of dude when you make a big mistake, you come to the sideline, he'll pat you on the back and say, "You'll get him next time." Like, FOH. Lay into that dude. Tell him what he did.
Popovich trying to chop your head off.
When you do something halfway right, he's still upset at you.
Yo, Popovich benched his starting point guard in the finals before, so.
Yo,
yeah.
Popovich cursed and then tried to trade him after winning the finals. So, you know, he's looking for perfection out there. Tony Parker used to be a whipping boy in San Antonio. Now, according to Jalen, you know, he's third best player in the league.
Speaking of Popovich, yo, let's get some finals talk going.
Yeah,
before we do, tell everybody real quick, you know, what's up.
All right. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. If you want to call in and speak to us about any of today's topics, dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline. That's 323-410-0012. Just press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk.
Yes, sir. It's time to talk about the NBA Finals, which is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear us, the War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, iPhone, Android phone, and if you happen to have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, hopefully the BlackBerry is given to you by your job, because if you bought one of those, you have bigger issues. And if you do have a Palm phone, tweet it to us, because I don't believe anybody walking the earth has a Palm phone, so send it to us at War Room Sports. But nonetheless, if you do have one, you can listen to our podcast right there. Go to Stitcher.com/The War Room. That's one word. Use the coupon code The War Room. It will enter you into a contest to win some money, and everybody loves money, right? So. and as always, Curtis Blow was Cheeks. So, gentlemen, series after three games, 2-1, your San Antonio Spurs. First game was competitive. The last two weren't. So, basically, I want to know, why is that so? Like, why is Miami able to blow out the Spurs and turn around in a couple days and get their arses kicked as well? What's going on?
I don't know, man. I think it's a conspiracy for them to fool the fans because, you know, after every blowout, the fan thinks the team that got blown out is done.
Prisoner of the moment society that we live in, pom-poms that y'all are.
I don't know. It seems like there's a situation. I mean, the series is on the seesaw. And, you know, they take turns winning, but like Jimmy said, like, I don't understand why, in the third quarters of the last two games, the games just totally got out of hand. Like, when it's your turn to lose, you just stop playing defense altogether and just let the other team do what they want with you. But it's a real interesting situation because we heard all the talk after game two. Miami came out and did actually what they do after they lose a playoff game. They come out and they beat teams by double figures most of the time after they lose a game. So for me, that wasn't unexpected. Now, game three, for them to lose by 36 points, that was totally unexpected for me.
Yeah.
You know, even if it was a point where, okay, they weren't going to win the game, 36 points, man, in an NBA Finals. But I'm still just not ready to say that they're done, though. But be awesome. What do you see in these two teams that's just making the seesaw look this bad?
I see in the Miami Heat, because of the big three, and particularly because of, you know, the big one, Paul, a superior athletic a team that's athleticism is superior. But when they face adversity when they face adversity in the form of a team that's not intimidated, that's not scared, that's going to maintain discipline, I think that rattles them a bit. They're not used to seeing people. They're not used to seeing a team that is able to respond to the onslaught, or
you call
the
them
onslaught
bullies.
From happening,
you're saying they're
bullies. The onslaught from happening via controlling the pace. So
the Gooch.
Yeah, you call
the
them
Spurs,
bullies, basically.
Yeah. They're bullies. The Spurs aren't scared. They're not intimidated, and in their mind, they believe that they're the better team. On the Spurs side, if they play discipline, they follow orders, they follow Pop, they maintain their discipline and play their game plan, they can win. The moment they slip up, the moment they aren't disciplined, they let Miami's athleticism beat them. And that's what happens.
Right.
So they lost discipline in game two.
Well, you know me and how I feel, because you spoke about Miami's athleticism, because people always want to bring up the Spurs' age, and you kind of know how I feel about that, because actually Miami's the older team on paper, but their core of guys, you know, their big three or whatever you
want
to call
doesn't
it,
count. You want Howard.
A part of,
the numbers,
yeah, they aren't a part of, you know, how old the team really is. So most of the heavy lifting is being done by fairly younger guys, except for Dwayne Wade. Like Jimmy said, he's like the oldest 30-year-old on the planet because of what his body has been through. But this series is just been an interesting turn of events for me. When you don't have a dog in the fight, like, you really, no pun intended, Mike Vick, but you really want to you want to see close games. You want to see competitive games. You know, I'm pretty sure anybody who are Spurs fans or Heat haters would love to see what they saw in game three, and vice versa for Miami fans and bandwagoners. They would love to see what they saw in game two. I get that, but I don't know, man. Even if it goes seven, but it keeps going this way, like, this wouldn't be an exciting series for me.
Yeah, not at all, and I agree. That's a great point because I was saying this in the video we did on WarmanSportsTV.com. I'm sitting there like, even if this goes seven games like we all wanted to go, if it's just a bunch of blowouts back and forth, yo, it just gets like, yo, it's wasting my time. It's ridiculous. But at the end of the day,
it's just gonna happen.
That's just like the first round of the playoffs was the same way, and I kept trying to tell
you. The first round of the playoffs was horrible.
Yeah. Because people kept talking about in the first and second rounds, of, look, how many game sevens we got. Yeah, but game three, four, and five, people were getting smacked. Like, doesn't matter how many games. Like, I've seen five-game series where it was more competitive. I mean, look at the Bulls. I mean, they got smacked, I think. Did they get smacked once or twice in that series? Either way, the Bulls, they lost in five games, but they made the series interesting because most of the games came down to the wire. So, you know, I'd rather see that than to see a seven-game series where it's three, four blowouts.
Well, so, here's my
the
thought
quality
there.
Of play has to – he's supposed to be the two best teams in the league. He's not supposed to get beat like that on this level. And I'm not just talking about the Heat because San Antonio got smacked as well in game two. So they're not exempt.
My thoughts there would be, based on what we know of Pop and what we know of the Spurs, I don't really see them getting blown out like that again. They may lose, but it's going to be more competitive than that just because Pop will bench everyone in the starting lineup if they're going to play like that. And they know that.
They
respond. That's kind of that level of discipline that I'm talking about. I definitely think that Pop controls and dictates that team versus the Heat, where the big three really dictate the team, and Spo is there to kind of coach around them.
Yeah, I think this series is coming down to, you know how they say that the role players play better at home? So if you notice, anytime Mike Miller or Chalmers get off or have a great game, is normally at home. Same thing with guys like Neal and even Green, even though Green hit a lot of threes in game two. But I think so. Now, when he came home, Green just exploded. So did Neal.
Crazy.
And Chalmers had, like, what, 0 points or 2 points? And Mike Miller, he hit some threes. But I think the fact that it's going to be in San Antonio these next two games, I mean, San Antonio messed around and ended there just because of the play of the role players. Now, if LeBron does all the things as a superstar that he's supposed to do, that we've been telling him to do, he can easily win these next two games. So it's going to come down to what does LeBron want to do and the Spurs role players.
I've never seen the greatest player in the world defended the way that the Spurs defended him, no. I've never seen that.
See, but that's why, like, what Kill just said, that rule generally holds true. That's why, you know, it's bad for these two teams that – in game two and three, both of these teams wasted a great game from one of their role players, you know, in getting blown out. Because in game two, Danny Green had the game of his life, you know, up until that point, until, you know, the next game when he had the game of his life again. But, you know, that was basically wasted in a 20-plus point blowout. And then in game three, you have Mike Miller, who was going crazy. In my opinion, Mike Miller was the only reason that they were even hanging around in the first half. Like, that third quarter pull away, that could have happened, you know, much earlier in the game, because when LeBron wasn't being aggressive and Dwayne Wade was missing shots and Chris Bosh was, like Jimmy said, trying to be Del Curry, you know, it wasn't really working for the team, but Mike Miller would keep hitting these timely threes to keep them in striking distance. I actually thought it was going to be a situation where, you know, when they were only down about four at the half, I'm like, man, they didn't stay around in this game. I think the Spurs might be in trouble. But then the Spurs came out later in the third quarter and just stepped on their necks. But
shout out to Gary Neal.
But you can't waste big games on the road from role players like that. But the only thing is, Miami can never get two role players, two or three of them going at the same time. Where's Haslam?
We consider Mike Miller and Ray Allen really the same as role. I know they're role players on the Heat. But they're less role players in
they're
mentality
players,
than Gary.
How are you trying
what
to
talking about? Ray Allen? Ray Allen, when he was a superstar, had a role players mentality. And you say that yourself more than anybody I know.
I do, and that's because I'm a
Yo,
I'm
Ray
a
Allen's
Ray
been
Allen
a role player since the 90s.
But hear me, hear my theory out. Both Mike Miller and Ray Allen have been, in certain instances, called upon to be the scoring option on their team. So they're
Mike Miller did what?
Yeah, Mike Miller was a 20-point per game
back in Orlando and Memphis. But that was a long time ago. At this point, Mike Miller and Ray Allen are.
Never been that in the NBA.
At this point, Mike Miller and Ray Allen are old heads who are chip chasers. Like Mike Miller is Mike Miller is actually now Robert Horry. He doesn't play at all in the regular season. He starts like one game in the playoffs up until this point, and there's rumors that he might be starting game four over Udonis Haslam. I don't know if they should make that adjustment because even though UD is playing like trash, that might get that might be the thing to get Tim Duncan going because they're going to try to put LeBron on Tim Duncan, start Mike Miller, and I just don't know if that's a good thing because Udonis has played okay defense. You know, and it seems like that part of the game always gets overlooked.
That's not like, that's
I never
not like
expected to get
me.
Overlooked. Yeah, I never expect that to get overlooked by an NBA head coach. So, you know, for their sake, I'm hoping they don't do that. But, hey, if they do.
It's not like a
panic. That would be very foolish, and that would be giving in to desperation because you're getting defensive production from Udonis Haslam. Why do you even care if he's not hitting shots? His job isn't to hit shots.
But, yeah, to be honest, Mike Miller is Robert Horry at this point. He don't even play into the playoffs.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call him Robert Horry. I don't know.
And he didn't even play into the conference finals. Like, he barely got in into the conference finals. Like,
he won the championship last season in game five.
shout out to DJ Willie G because he said Mike Miller won the chip last year. So it is what it is.
Ah, Disney. He had 23 that game. Y'all dissing Mike Miller, man. Gary Neal ain't never been a go-to scorer in the NBA.
Yeah,
Mike
let me
Miller
tell you, Gary Neal looked like a tall Tracy Morgan with a jump shot. Yo, hustle man, shoot. And a lot of people are surprised, but you know, if you know his history, you know he was a scorer in college. You know his stint at LaSalle was short-lived. Jimmy will tell you why, and then he went to Towson. And
yeah.
And did his thing there. But, you know, people from Towson don't really get attention from the league. But it's what we've always said, man. San Antonio Spurs probably has the best scouting department, not just in the NBA, but in all of professional sports because they get a lot of dudes who you've never heard of or you didn't know was that good or people from overseas and all kinds of different countries. And they're always competitive with a bunch that they just put together like that.
Yo,
so
if you watch the type of shots that Gary Neal takes, you can tell that in his mind, he thinks he belongs there. My man will pull up from 2 feet behind the line early in the shot clock.
All right, screen team.
Bottom line is this: if you can play basketball and you're in an alleyway in Istanbul, yo, the Spurs will find you. They travel the world to find talent, and you know.
Yo, can you tell our listeners though why did Gary Neal end up at Towson, Jimmy? Because you know the story. He was almost there.
Gary Neal, was a player at LaSalle University, which is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and allegedly, he kind of had a situation which is let's put it like this: it was similar to what happened to Kobe Bryant in Eagle, Colorado. Which resulted in him, not being in LaSalle. So it kind of, like, messed up his image and his brand at the time because he was putting up numbers in the A-10. Like, he was putting up numbers then playing for LaSalle. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, no one knows what the truth is. The situation is over with, and he went to Towson, and, you know, Spurs found him. Again, doesn't matter where you're at. If you're in Tanzania and you're playing on a crate but you have a basketball skill, you know, the Spurs will find you. No, the Spurs will find you, regardless of where you are. So,
yes, sir.
It is what it is. Anyway, man, we got a call on the line, man. Let's bring the homie on to hear what he has to say about these finals. I'm very interested to hear what he has to say. My homie Naeem, be more by way of Philly. My fellow Laker gang members in the house. Laker gang, what's good?
Laker Nation number one. I got three
you
things to say first. Three things to say first. Number one, y'all brothers need to take a bow. Y'all for it because y'all showing. I'm trying to change my militant mind of way of thinking sometimes. This is my dad's upbringing, I guess. But y'all take a bow. Y'all doing a hell of a job. No, seriously.
Thank you,
I heard the little endorsement deals. If I'm not mistaken, I heard DirecTV. That's major. You know what I mean? Y'all were like a little kid, and y'all going up to this big adult now. Just don't get like LeBron. That's all I'm saying.
I was waiting for it.
Don't get like LeBron. Oh, you know I'm ready, Jimmy. Oh, I'm ready. Be awesome. I'm ready. This dude is a fall like a diamond.
Hey, now
you know
I'm going to get like LeBron.
Games in the finals.
Soon as soon as somebody dissed the show or something, I'm like, look, man, after y'all listen to the show, you got to go back to your miserable lives. I'm just like LeBron. After y'all finish listening, you got to still go back to your miserable life.
Your miserable life. Number two.
He sounded so bitter when he said that, though. Like, how bitter are you?
Damn,
I forgot LeBron said that.
Number two is LeBron. What's going on with him, man? Fake fraud, diamond, fake diamond, CZ. I don't know what's going on with him. He's just,
calling him cubic zirconia?
Yeah. Because No, seriously. How do you have a bad game in the final? You already mentioned with the greats. You gotta do. Like, all right, look at Kobe when he used to go against Bowen. Bowen used to beat Kobe up, but he found a way to beat Bowen. This dude don't have that gut check. That second oomph. You know, like they have a special
when you're struggling, you gotta find a way to get to the line, and he went to the line zero times in game three. Zero times.
He's not doing it. And I think they gave this kid too much credit. You know? To me, he's like a good friend of mine that I know personally. I hope not his family listens to the show, but I don't care. Rudy Gay, you know? Disappointment to me. And I hate to say I know him personally, but I do, you know? Disappointment in the league. I mean, I'm being real. $50 million, bum, I call him now. Call him to his face. He don't take it personal. But I guess not with that kind of check he got cut. Yeah, I mean, he's not a bum, but, I mean, the league, come on, you got paid now. It's time to shine.
Yeah.
You got your deal to shine.
Rudy Gay should be dominating.
I can't let you slander LeBron and put him on Rudy Gay level, though. Man.
No, but that's not. But hear me out.
When we go in that hard, it kills our credibility as LeBron.
No, I'm not going in on, I'm not saying he's like Rudy Gay, but I'm just saying. Like how me personally, I know Rudy. I pump him up. Like the media knows LeBron, they pump this kid up to be the next god or something in basketball, and he's not.
He's not. And it's one of those things, man, where you know. And before I say this, I'm not comparing him to Kobe because I don't think he's like mentality is completely different. But I blame all this on Mike, yo. I really do blame Mike for this. Like,
how do you blame that on Mike?
Now listen to what I'm saying, because ever since
he's a Michael Jordan hater. But go ahead.
No, I'm not hating Michael Jordan. No, what I'm saying is that ever since Mike, we've been looking for the next Mike, whether it's Harold Miner or
Jimmy,
you know, Kobe
Jimmy,
Bryant
Jimmy,
or
Jerry Stackhouse.
Jimmy. Oh, okay.
Jimmy,
okay.
I agree with you though.
So
I understand
now,
that.
What I'm saying. So LeBron has like let down a lot of people, but at the end of the day, this guy was considered like a child prodigy. Like Nike has to have somebody to put in our face. So,
but
I blame Nike. I blame Nike more than that. Nike has to have, you know, the face of their brand. So, you know, he's growing up in front of our eyes and has taken his falls, and it is what it is. LeBron was considered a child prodigy as a basketball player. I mean, he's been on ESPN since, like, a high school freshman. Like,
now, I'm going to leave you on this note. I don't mean to cut you off. Is this one, Jimmy? You touched a soft spot when you were talking about Jay. You know, Dr. Jay is a god to some people in Philadelphia. So my dad is one. Now, when you said about Teddy T and his wife, I wish they would have went more detail about the car accident on Lincoln Drive.
We all know. We know what it is.
You know.
But you know, I'm going to leave that alone, man. You know, let Dr.
with that, man.
So with the other thing I'm being said.
Yeah, I went to you.
Yeah,
we gotta let Doc get his shine, man. I'm not gonna be mad. We all know what happened.
No, but they put the little transvestite and all that. You know, that was cool. Teddy is a Philly guy. You know what I mean? And I remember the Sixers winning that year. I mean, disgusted as I was, like, you know, the whole Philly went crazy. I remember walking on my dad's shoulders. Like, I think it was dad talking about a little spin around TV and all that. I remember it. I'm like, yo, wow, that was crap on a flashback.
Floor
but,
model.
That was myself. Yeah, the floor model with the little switch joint turning, little thing swinging around, whatever.
Yeah, they don't know about that, yo.
No,
you know
that's
what I mean?
A floor
model break, you just put another TV on top of it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's an uptown thing where the grass is green.
You know what I mean?
Girls are cleaner.
All right, bro, man. Thanks for the call.
All right. All right.
What did you say about the whole
aluminum foil? Huh?
Oh, yeah. Yo, what you know about getting, like, the pliers to turn the knob when
All right, go ahead, Dan.
What you know about government cheese and the blood? Never mind. Go ahead.
All that I got is you.
I'm saying, man. What you think our macaroni was made from? What do you think our mac and cheese was made from that night? We had the broom out like, sweet.
Yo, it sounds like a Tony Stark's video, man.
Yo, Kool-Aid was mad sugary, son.
But, Dev, you were getting ready to say something to my point about LeBron being, you know, kind of presented to us in this manner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely, because, like you said, he was a child prodigy. I mean, I think as far as the hype is concerned, I think LeBron's lived up to the hype because a lot of the
oh, absolutely. He's
you know, yeah, the average dude couldn't take that type of hype and then still, you know, come into the league and do what he's done.
He's
it's just
that
like
good.
With LeBron, 10 years in, it's just still with him, it's a mental thing because LeBron can do anything he wants to do on a basketball court, but it seems like in certain situations, you know, it's still there. And that, and we talked about this last season. I remember last year when they won the NBA Finals. Damn, I was in Vegas around that time last year too, but I was there for the closeout game. And I remember I called into the show and I was telling you guys, okay, LeBron showed some of that stuff that people thought that he didn't have in that series. But I also said it's one time, it's 1 year. I'm still not willing to release, you know, the title from him. Not that I was being that hard on, because I wasn't calling him a choke artist or anything like that. But I just wasn't ready to say that he's definitely this and he has a killer instinct now, because that stuff is not, you know, that stuff with a lot
overnight,
of people is natural.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, you can't
well,
just
let me
buy
present something to
the
you.
Killer instinct. I just think he had a good playoffs last year.
Do you think, I don't, first off, a couple questions. First one is, can you develop a killer instinct, or is that something that you just innately have? Before you answer that, though.
I don't think you can.
When you said
the word instinct is instinctual. Like, I don't think you can.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Because he was presented to us the way he was, because he was a freshman and got, you know, the kind of coverage he got, because he was on a Sports Illustrated cover as a high school player, it's kind of like things have been given to him. And, you know, I think Nike is the devil. Everybody knows that. So it's kind of like things have been given to him to present him as, like, the savior or the next
right.
big guy in basketball. Whereas, though,
no doubt.
As much as I talk about it being Michael Jordan kind of had to earn this. When he was in high school, he got cut from his team. When he was in college, it's arguably that he wasn't the best player on his college team. And, you
see,
know,
but, Jimmy, that's what people don't understand, who are the dudes who, you know, don't have cars and they actually ride around on LeBron's jock strap. Those are the people who don't realize that's why everybody's so hard on LeBron. That's why, you know what I'm saying, his game gets nitpicked more than, you know, we're going to nitpick Gary Neal's game, because he has been presented to us as a savior. And you can't say that you're not going to blame him, because he took every moment of it and loved it. The
because,
dude got the chosen one written on his damn back. Like,
yeah, and that's
he
thing.
Was King
Anytime,
James
like, and,
before he even got into the league, and he accepted all
and
that.
Right now,
and then
talked
about
everybody,
chips before he had him. Talked about eight chips before he had one.
Instead of saying all the cliches, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown, you know what I mean, with great power comes great responsibility. Let's put it this way. All those cliches, like Austin said in our video, they apply to LeBron, and we know that. But I think there's something about that, because even with Kobe, he didn't come in the league as a starter. Kobe and Jordan, if we're using them as a measuring stick, because, you know, that's who he's always compared to. Those guys, even if they weren't born with it, they kind of like built that because they had to earn their way. Like, you know,
Kobe was an 18-year-old who had to get off the bench. He didn't come in and
was
the leader of a bad team.
I know you guys remember this. Before Mike won his first chip, people used to dog Mike and call him a loser. They say he's nothing but a gunner that scores 30
a game.
They
say he was a gunner who would never win a chip that way.
Mike wasn't loved the way he was.
They've forgotten every criticism Mike used to get, like people's
Mike
memories.
Used to get,
yeah.
Mike was a
machine pistol, and I, for one, I don't have the same connotation of that as most folks. You
that's
know,
not negative for me.
Say
right.
that. Most people say that it's a negative for me. I love every instant of it. I saluted Mike for being able to take 30 shots, regardless of whether they went in or not.
So your favorite player right now is J.R. Smith, then?
And my thing
actually, you're right. I love J.R. Smith, pause that, but I think his IQ is too low. Now, to your point, Jimmy, and this is the only thing I'm going to say, great points being made. Listen, character, and heart are developed through trial and tribulation and obstacles. If everything is given to you, hardship comes as insurmountable. Hardships are insurmountable. Why? Because everything came easy. Everything came easy. So we're witnessing what may be the maturation of LeBron, and he may take this hardship on in front of us and turn into the greatest player ever. But right now, if we want to nitpick, because you have the chosen one written on your back, so it's our job as the media to nitpick and take shots, I will even go back to the finals last year when he won and say, even in that game, even in some of those games, LeBron was passing up shots and letting Rio take shots and letting Mike Miller take shots. He didn't want the pressure of a miss. He didn't want that. Dude does not want to. Failure for him is that monster in the closet. Missing that shot is that monster in the closet. And until that comes off of his back, the chosen one on his back is really a lie.
And Casey Mack in the chat room going off on us. He was saying LeBron has exceeded the hype and his chapter hasn't finished, you know, being written. I agree with that.
He may have Michael exceeded
Jordan,
the hype.
He said Michael Jordan wasn't good enough to come out of high school. I agree with that, too. But I also think that the league was tougher. Think about when LeBron came out of high school. That was after dudes came out of high school, like, where that was along that big influx of high school people where you had, like, Chandler being an early pick. You had, what's the big dude's name?
Eddie Curry.
Being an early pick. Cats like Kwame Brown, Corleone Young. Yeah, you're trying to tell me that them dudes were good? They weren't good. The league was just weak, so they could come out of high school. And everybody was drafting people off potential. So, you know, LeBron was different because, you know, he came out of high school with the thought that, you know, this dude could come right into the league and average 20, you know, and do his thing. And he did. So, like, seriously, the best two players out of high school, in my opinion, like in their first year, was LeBron James and Amari Stoudemire. Amari Stoudemire was instant impact. He was an instant superstar because he wasn't touted like LeBron was coming out of school. But Amari Stoudemire held
his own. No KG? No KG, Dennis?
Not the best
not
two.
Not his rookie year.
KG may be three, but
he,
I think
yeah,
the best
right,
two,
right
like,
there, he,
immediate
yeah.
impact was LeBron James and Amari Stoudemire.
But I just want Casey Mack to know, no one's disrespecting LeBron. We understand that he's exceeded expectations.
Yeah, we're kind of breaking down the psyche of fans and why LeBron gets the nitpicking that he gets.
With all the praise that he gets, and believe me, he gets praise. All of us, you know, around this round table think that LeBron James is the greatest player in the world right now. So we're not disrespecting
him.
Yeah,
everybody agrees. So Casey Mack, your saddle is safe on his Richard. We're not trying to knock you off his Richard.
No, he still has been, you know, kind of given things. And what we mean by that is, you know, the endorsements, the way he's been put as the face of the league. He didn't have to earn that. And when he came in the league, he wasn't the best player his first year, but he was already one of the most marketed players as a rookie before he earned his stripes, so to speak. And that's not his fault. The fact of the matter is, it's our fault as the public because we crave these brands. It's the Jordan factor, man. Jordan has impacted the game in so many ways outside, off the court, that it's kind of ridiculous. We live in a society where we love heroes. Everybody's a hero.
We had
a conversation about this off air, about, you know, how I was telling about this book I was reading. They talk about, you know, hero chefs and hero real estate agents. You have hero attorneys.
Everybody's a hero.
Everybody's a hero. These are heroes. And LeBron,
I'm a hero in my hometown, baby.
That's why dudes can get on TV in any profession. As long as you can get on TV, you know, you're going to get worship because people are always looking for it. Look at dudes like, what's his name, Buddy? I forgot his last name. The Cake Boss Boy. He went from one show in one little bakery. Now he got two bakeries, like the one that we visited, Jimmy, when we were up in Jersey.
Yo,
and now he has, like, a warehouse joint. And he got, like, nine shows now. Like, he
is
the bakery dude.
Me and Jeff got to his bakery at, like, 9 in the morning, and the line was longer than the equator, yo. It was ridiculous. But at the end of the day, this is the society we live in. We live in a society full of hero
right.
worship, and LeBron came around at that time. He came around at
and
that
Jim,
time.
And, Jim, there could be a bakery across
working?
The street who make way better cupcakes, but they're not going there because they're not on TV. It's not a hero type thing.
Yo, speaking of hero worship,
so he gets
you know,
criticism
y'all notice?
And he gets respect. All that comes along with it.
Hey, to speak to that, you notice every network marketing company, it's always one hero that everybody points to. Hey, it's this guy, John Smith. He
no,
had all
shout out to
sales.
My man, Les Brown. Shout out to Les Brown, the hero, professional hero. Hero on duty, hero for hire.
Listen, man, this is the world we live in.
Multi-level marketing heroes.
But that's what it is, though. This is the world that we live in, man. LeBron James has came around. He's been put as the face of the league, the face of – you know, Nike, a Fortune 500 company. He's their faith. He's their God. And salute to him for that. But at the end of the day, he didn't earn it the way that players before him did. Like, when Michael Jordan was the face of Nike, he put work in to do that.
But you know what, Jimmy?
And
LeBron is another example of the negative effects of the Michael Jordan legacy. Because
He is.
And no matter how good LeBron is, like, he dominates the NBA, but his championship count isn't where people would expect it to be for all the attention he gets. And you know, that, like I said, that's one of the things that after Michael Jordan, now you can't be a great player unless you got championships. Like,
yeah, and we blame
Bill
Michael
Russell had
LeBron,
11
LeBron
championships
probably,
before Mike was even thought of, and nobody talked about that until Mike got 6. You only heard Bill having 11 so much after Mike got 6, because now it's the
here's
standard
the thing, though,
to get a bunch of championships, or you can't
here's
be great.
I think Bird and Magic are to blame, too. Bird and Magic kind of started
I mean,
that,
no,
you know,
but
like
I think society as a whole, man, because this is nothing personal to LeBron. I mean, LeBron's resume is immaculate. You look, he did in the Olympics and at the MVP trophies. I mean, regardless, he's only won one. This is like his fourth trip to the finals. That's not easy to do. But look at football. Look at RG3.
That's like
My man played like 14 games, and he's being like, yeah, they're buying his wedding gifts. Are you kidding me? This is the world
we need a hero.
RG3 has been in the league more than 1 year. They buying his wedding gifts and putting them on a pedestal.
Fans, listeners,
they're
going to
need security at that man's
podcast.
Wedding, man. They're going to need security.
People that will listen to this podcast 1,000 years from now, in this 21st century, dick rotting was a problem.
Why is he talking to the future right now?
Is out of control. Listen, Casey Mack has made a point. Casey Mack if LeBron can have 3 or 4 rings, and folks will still rag on him. And like I told him in the chat room, that's part of being, quote, the king. He's calling himself the king. I mean, the guy calls himself the king.
Yeah, he
James.
Did that to himself. He said 8
he
champions.
He calls himself the king.
He's doing that to himself.
See, but
man got a tattoo on him that says the chosen one. Like, yo, so when you proclaim these things, when you put that out in the universe, yo, criticism comes with that. And, you know, he said he called himself the king as a 17-year-old. He still called himself the king. His Twitter name is King James.
That's what I'm saying, man. Don't cry for him, because even if he gets one championship, he still goes home. And he's a multimillionaire, going
to
be working on a billion in about 10 years, and we got to go back to our miserable lives. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yo, LeBron said, go back to your miserable life. Listen, man,
y'all still got to go home and get up at 6 o'clock.
And like I said, this is not just LeBron. When you're considered that guy, like, you know, when the Knicks get criticized, who gets most of the criticism? Carmelo. Like, it is what it is. He gets slammed in the New York press. If you ever read the New York Post, yo, they killed Carmelo now, and the Knicks haven't even played in weeks.
They sit around before anything bad happens, Kill. I think they sit around and just try to, like, do fancy things with his name. So when a headline comes out, they can have a headline with different variations of his name, and they just have a list, and they're just ready.
Yo,
like Carmelo.
That's what I'm saying, but that's because he's that guy. Kobe takes criticism. People hate Kobe just as much as they hate LeBron. Like, the Kobe love fest and hate fest is the same as LeBron.
Yeah,
that's
an example right there. Like Casey Mack said that. Kobe got 5 rings, and his game still get ragged.
You know how Kobe answered it? He said, I'm going to get up 6 a.m., 6 months out the year, 6 days of the week, and work out. That's what he said. That's how I'm going to handle it.
Listen, so it is what it is, man. Like,
with that said, I think LeBron going to go for 45 on the Spurs in game four. Because like
you know,
all I said, he's being poked, he's being goaded. He may not have that in him naturally, but he's taken enough guff in the last 2 days between games to make him go out, put on the serious face that he put on in game six against Boston last year, and do his thing. So the Spurs are in trouble, period.
And you know what's funny about that is, you know, he's capable of doing it. He probably will do it. And like you just said, Dev, anytime something like this happens where he's taking a beating over the last couple of days, he usually comes back and responds. But I guess the point that we're all trying to make is, why do you have to be poked and prodded and goaded into playing this way? You know what I mean? Like
My man Michael Jordan would have taken offense to Casey Mack being in our chat room saying something.
No, he would have blamed Casey Mack and went out and scored 50. But at the end of the day,
somebody had nothing to do with it.
Because, yo, why are we comparing him to Mike? So we're to blame, too. Like, you know, if he wants to be a sucker and a loser and scared to get in the post, let him be that. Let's not compare him to Mike.
Boom.
Whoa.
Going to play.
Jetty Mar said that he heard, he says, that LeBron had mono and was playing with mono, that this is what's going around. So I don't know nothing about that. Did you guys hear
mono,
that?
Mono is the kissing disease. I can see the kissing disease in that locker room. I can see that.
Yeah. I didn't hear that, but I'll tell you something else. That's always a thing, too. When LeBron starts struggling in the playoffs, then you start hearing stuff.
It's always
like
an excuse.
You got mono. Delonte was smashing his mom, so he was mad. Like, come
before
on.
Before we go away, we got to call on the line. We got to call on the line. I'm going to bring on now just to see what they want to say real fast.
I play
with
Crab.
Yo, 818, what's going on?
What's up,
it's
your boy, Rob, man. How y'all doing?
Rob.
San Diego
Robbie,
dudes.
Yo.
I know it's early out there. They calling like the last minute of the show. What's up, Rob?
I'll take some business. The boy just got his AA degree, you know.
Don't worry about it. You know we appreciate your call every week.
Congrats, homie. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. You
a hero in your hometown, baby.
Thanks, man. About the series, I'm real kind of mad because Tony Parker's out. But one thing I want to point out is I was going to say last week about Tim Duncan. Like we were talking about. Like, when you measure a player, like you're talking about the greatest of all time, you measure the offense, the defense, how they bring to the game, their consistency. And Tim Duncan has always been consistent in his numbers. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Hang on. You said Parker's out?
He's day-to-day. I don't know if he's going to be out.
Oh, yeah. He's supposed to play in game four. I don't know. You know, he might not be 100%, but he's playing.
He better play through it, though. Rob, before we let you go, because we got to get off air, let me ask you a question. What's your prediction for tonight's game?
Tonight? I think if Parker hurt that bad, which I think he is, I think he should sit out. But I think that he will probably win by like 10.
Okay. All right, well, Rob, we about to get off air, man, but thanks for the call, man. We got you on record as saying the Heat by 10. We'll see what happens, man. Don't forget to check in with us next week, man. Call in a little bit earlier so we can, you know, really rap to you. But thanks for the call, homie.
Parker will be on the court. He might not be 100%, but he'll be on the court.
All right, real quick, before I get us out of here, gentlemen, I got Heat by double digits, too.
Heat by double digits.
Kill, who you got? All right, B. Austin, who you got?
Heat by two.
I got Heat by double digits as well. And I think Kill said he had the Heat as well. So, with that being
LeBron
said,
LeBron with 55.
Holla at him.
Damn! He going with 55 in San Antonio. Thanks for joining us again in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, Facebook, Twitter. All the callers that chimed in and even the calls we didn't get a chance to get to, we apologize. Hit us back next week. Remember, same time, same place for another episode of Us Talking Smack about your favorite athletes because none of them could beat it. We either have an NBA champion to talk about or we'll be coming to you with live NBA Finals Game 7 previews. Until then, enjoy your sports week, and we'll see you right back here next time. Be sure to watch our conversations. Remember, Facebook, Twitter, @WorldInSports. WarRoomSportsTV.com for the videos. Shout out to Rock Blackwell on his upcoming fight this Saturday in Scotland. Check War Room Sports TV for the video tomorrow. The War Room is behind you, homie. Until next time, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top.
Be a hero in your hometown, baby.
Yo, every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, Be Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial. Call in 323-0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well. Yeah. Physical podcast, the tough push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-Flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cap? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.